as I said, we have three people speaking today, and each one is different from the other. Our first speaker is Brindy Spencer, and she is a woman who explores ideas, as I think many of us are. I think the best way to introduce her is by saying that she devised her own university course. It was called What Conditions Optimize a Sense of Belonging. Her thesis was titled, How Can I Facilitate Group Intimacy? And it delved into ways our perceptions are influenced and how this looks and affects the way we belong. Brindy.
Hello. Growing up, I had the idea that I needed to figure out my group, the population that I could best support, something like youth, immigrants, people with disabilities. I had this idea that I couldn't be whole and complete until I knew my specific place in the world in relation to what cause I am most passionate about supporting. I still have not found that population. I took a math class in university where the professor talked about the concept of the mess. It was a problem-solving course where we were given math riddles to solve. The mess was the period of confusion between when you know what a problem is and when you've come to a solution or next step forward. My professor explained that this concept translates into pretty much every aspect of our life. He also shared that it is better to enjoy the experience of the mess rather than be frightened or overwhelmed by the unknown. I still have not found my population, but through my investigation of the mess of meaning in my life, I realized there was something not quite ordinary about how from age 8 onwards, I went to the library to get books on activities to plan my birthday parties. Or how when I was 17, I put together a 500-page activity booklet after attending international peace education camps. Or how throughout elementary, high school, and even university, I jumped between friend groups at lunchtime, not content to fit into the restrictive mold of choosing just one. Or the immense joy that I still feel spending hours staring at my agenda, fitting in all my activities. I went to a university where I had the privilege of designing my own education. I felt more loved on that residential campus than I have ever experienced, and a piece of my life puzzle clicked in. The mess of determining my area of study brought out the concept of looking at what conditions optimize a sense of belonging. A challenge I've come across in walking through the messes and collecting little touchstones to build my own trail is that the more I know, the less interested I feel in settling for what is already out there. I find myself again and again forging my own path in a barely touched forest. I believe that creating one's own path requires creativity, and my creativity often comes in the form of poetry. So while it may not be standard to share our one's own poetry during a service, I'd like to share something that I wrote for my thesis. For as long as I can remember, I have coasted past people and places that might have held me or let me grow in favor of following an internal compass that pointed towards opportunities waiting to be gathered. As I kept moving away, my anchor lost its tethering from lack of use, and I fear drifting alone forever. So I made rafts out of driftwood and welcomed other wary voyagers aboard. As I wrapped them in my skin to shelter them from the wet and cold, they shared their stories of time at sea easily. I equated staying afloat to helping others, constantly keeping quiet about how the wind bit at my bones for fear that the heaviness of my burdens would exceed the capacity of their rickety lifeboats. An iceberg in my path caused me to question my course. As I unveiled holes in my craft, I realized I could let the gaze and warmth of others in. They provided a haven for skeleton me by lending me their clothes until I stepped back into the skin I almost forgot I carried around my waist and finally felt the itch of isolation I had attempted to ignore. I am a hybrid, the only one of my kind alone on Noah's Ark. But the more I realize, The more I look, the more I realize everyone is a black sheep in a flock of seagulls. But that doesn't mean we cannot be embraced. I want to use my cold hands and warm heart to build up the icebergs that are melting, for swimmers to have a place to rest amongst the fellowship of other creatures, all looking for a space to dock their feet, paws, or fins. We are not alone in our search for togetherness, and we do not need to tread in loneliness while lost in the currents of our solo journeys. It is clearer to me now that I have a huge interest in creativity, expression, and belonging, that I want to do curriculum development, coordination, and facilitation, that I want to work with my peers, and that I want to investigate myself deeply and support others in their self-explorations. I recognize that there are messes everywhere, but the fear, stress, and anxiety around being in them are optional. I'm not at that acceptance stage yet, but I do know that it is of vital importance to my well-being that I create a meaningful life. Right now, my reasons for walking include having people in my life I can rely on and that can rely on me, connecting with people in ways that go beyond words, such as social dancing, and creating programs to increase the sense of self-worth and efficacy of individuals. Still, even without a clearly defined population to support, I walk to continue finding more clarity in the mess of meaning.
Thank you, Brindy. And I intentionally left a little pause there because I think that after we have heard these people speak, we need a moment to just reflect on what they have said. Our next speaker is Judith McLean. And in the process of developing her life, is owner of a business training individuals and groups for transformation. She works with difficult conversations, teamwork, one-on-one relationships, and group decision making. Judith.
Why I walk. Is this on? Some of you who I've met know that I've been spending the last year and a bit decluttering and straightening things out. I've got a PowerPoint coming up shortly to help guide me. So here we go. What is saved through the process of decluttering gives one a sense of what brings meaning to your life. So the short version is going to be on the screen. And if you want to get to know me a little bit better, there is a version of, I've put together a museum in the back corner if you want to get to know some more. So I thought I would start with the archaeological approach, and that's what some of the remnants are back there. What gives me meaning? Well, the first one is a jewelry box. I went through a jewelry box and found minor items of interest. And the first item that came up is, are you okay? Oh, let's get the lights. Thank you. So in that jewelry box, the first thing that came up was a little button that said, quit smoking. I was 16 and invited to go to a UBC conference on the perils of tobacco. And at 16, I decided to try and get everyone I knew to quit smoking. And because of that enthusiasm, a number of people got interested in what I was talking about, and then I was invited to go on television and talk about the perils of smoking from a 16-year-old perspective. I thought I had great influence, not. The second area of interest was the travel industry. For 7 years, I worked in helping people plot their journeys, where they could go and where they could save money and budget traveling. And in that reflection of what was going on as a travel agent, there was a surface level of travel going on in my world. I was uninformed. I ended up going to a cruise. This is my first husband, Victor Knight, and his mom. We took her to Europe on this crazy trip called 6 countries in 7 days, because I worked for a travel agency that said, you need to know where you're sending people. And so off we went, and then what we discovered was in the cathedrals that we sailed past on the Rhine were filled with a lot of stolen possessions. As I grew older, I started to understand what I was seeing in my journey as a young woman was not the truth. And that started to shape how my meaning changed. The swastika was actually representative of all of the art that we witnessed in various cathedrals and things that had been stolen from so many people. And so what we had coming up was another cathedral experience to fast forward, because at the time when I was a young woman, all these children were being removed from their homes, as we heard from the child's story this morning. By the way, I didn't even know, Michael, what that story was going to be, but it's certainly timely. And those of us who went to see the children of God recognize that this brings meaning to our lives, to put light on areas where there wasn't. I think it's our turn to have a voice and to have these conversations and to explore what's going on in the basements of the cathedrals. The second husband that I had, marriage is going to be a theme through this, by the way, was a minister of social justice. He was part of the United Church. I became the minister's wife, which was a joke, because I didn't do wifely things from a minister's wife perspective. But what I did do was get in heavily involved with his congregation in the area of sending medical supplies to Guatemala, in dealing with Caldecott's, the ending of military buildup in the planet. We were looking at all kinds of social justice issues that were actually... It seemed overwhelming at the time, but I realized what it was doing was bringing me meaning in getting involved in other people's issues. And so one of the things that happened, my husband Thomas and I were invited to, I can't see that, so I'm just going to get close. Yeah, besides the medical supplies, we were sharing stories about sexual abuse by the Catholic order, because I learned much later that my father had actually been a victim of that abuse, and that also started to give my life meaning. I realized the reason I was interested in deviance and juvenile delinquents, et cetera, was because my father was one, and he didn't get the care that he needed as a youngster, which started to give me freedom of figuring out meaning in my life. I have no idea what that says. The other issue was inclusive language. My husband Thomas was very involved in improving the green book of the order of service in the United Church to make the language inclusive. So for a while, I was really a radical feminist and correcting everybody's language, which was really annoying, very annoying. I know that now. And so, I'm sorry the screen is so dark, I have no idea why, so you can't sing along, but my goal was, music is not where I get meaning in my life, but I did want to share some song with you that was very central in my time with the United Church. It's called, and if you can sing along, please do, it's, I'm sorry the screen is so dark, I have no idea, this is not, no, I don't know why it's blue, nope. Doesn't carry on. Okay, here's the song. And if I can't sing and I can't keep, I tried recruiting various members of the choir this morning to help, but I couldn't find a soprano that was ready to do this on the spot. So here we go. It goes like this. Sometimes I wish my eyes hadn't been opened. Sometimes I wish I could no longer see all of the pain and the hurt and the sorrow of my sisters and me as we try to be free. Sometimes I wish my eyes hadn't been opened, but now I'm going to read from my work here, because I can't see the lyrics on the screen. I have to find the song, sorry. Here we go. It's really tiny print. Sometimes I wish my eyes hadn't been opened just for an hour. Oh, how sweet it would be not to be struggling, not to be striving, but just sleep securely in our slavery. But now that I've seen with my eyes, I can't close them, because deep inside me, somewhere I'd still know the road that my sisters and I have to travel. My heart would say yes, and my feet would say go. One of the reasons I walk is to shed light on oppression, victimization. I've been involved since I left Thomas, became a social worker, and I ended up working, my first job as a social worker was the downtown East Side, helping women on welfare find safety within the court system when they had to report a rape, within their own housing. The Balmoral Hotel was quite a challenging place to live for single women in the mature years. They had to put out sexual favors just to get a key. They had to fight with people just to get access to the tub. It was quite unsafe. So that became my meaning for a while. There's a woman that, I'm sorry, I changed my slides from what's up there, so I'm just going to try and catch up with you. The woman that's in that picture also represents another area that brought meaning to my life for a couple years, was researching the impact of elder abuse. There is so much isolation of our seniors now, men and women, and the amount of abuse is incredible. And that gave me purpose, and I spent a lot of time putting light on that issue when I worked for the federal government of Canada, trying to improve issues for our seniors population. And that kept me busy for a little while. The next area was called literacy. A lot of people couldn't even access programs of support because they couldn't read the forms. 40% of Canadians are functionally illiterate. So for 3 years, I worked in the literacy movement, trying to improve issues and concerns around literacy. And we actually produced a booklet on how to do that in the region that I was involved with. But what I learned was there's a withholding of information. When you work for the government, everything is written at grade 17. And so when it's at grade 17, people can't access the services. I wonder if that's intentional. I'm not going to finish the last thing I wanted to share with you because I'm getting my signal. One of the husband number three, just to finish the theme of marriage, I found out my real purpose in life was to be a wonderful wife. I was brilliant at growing the men that I worked with and I played with and I loved deeply. This gentleman was the founder of a college for Aboriginal students, and he and I explored and did fabulous things for a quarter of a century, and my purpose was to keep him healthy, which I failed at the last 3 years of his life. He sadly passed away, but he gave me meaning. He gave me a reason to walk. I had a partner to walk with. The last thing I want to say, in the jewelry box, there was a letter that I wrote to myself a year ago, and it was a letter from God saying, Judith, you're doing good. Take a rest. So my next meaning in life is to rest with friends, bring new love into my life, and be able to keep walking and not falling and keep singing and dancing. Thank you.
Thank you, Judith. And we'll just have a pause while we let that sink in. Al Sather seeks truth and understanding based on evidence. Existentialism validates his philosophical worldview. He trusts in science, which changes and develops with new ideas, in contrast to metaphysical and theological systems, which are resistant to deviation. So we now have the existentialist, Al Sather.
So that gets to be a good jump from anthropology to existentialism. I was asked to speak here today about a path I walk that gives my life meaning, and told, please keep it to 5 minutes. Impossible was my first thought, followed quickly by, what? So I decided to do the obvious, speak on a simple topic like existentialism and how it leads me to meaning and fulfillment. Briefly, existentialism is a philosophy, not a religion, that starts from evidence-based science and rational reasoning, rejecting metaphysics and the supernatural. From disciplines like modern-day cosmology and evolutionary biology, it is evident that the creation or the creative forces of our universe are stochastic or random processes without direction or purpose or design. Critics of those making this claim say this leads to a sense of disorientation, confusion, or dread in the face of an apparently meaningless or absurd world. I disagree. In his philosophy, Sartre replaced the phrase essence, that is God, before existence, the core of Western theology and metaphysics, with existence before essence. In doing so, he dismantled or dismissed metaphysics and the tyrannical control of the gods over humanity, and thereby releasing the power of freedom of choice for self-determination and self-expression. I remember the day I was browsing through a bookshop when I first found a collection of blank books without lines. I thought, these things are stupid. Who would buy a blank book, not even with lines? They must be a joke. At that time, I had no idea or understanding why anybody would buy such a book. Today, I buy several blank books a year. I see the blank book as a metaphor for the existentialist view of the meaning of the absurd world that we live in. They are but an empty sketchbook of the artist. However, they become the artist's record, a store of fleeting images and ideas that may later develop into a completed painting, poem, song, or story. Meanwhile, in life, including the arts, meaning in life, including the arts, comes from the inside and is not a gift from an external force. The existentialist has moved beyond metaphysics. Artistic potential for expression comes from the creativity released through a worldview based on freedom of choice. The artistic community can only provide encouragement and support, a safe place for work. It should not tell the artist what they can or should not do. This is the essence of Samuel Beckett's play, Waiting for Godot, which illustrates the absurdity of life when the challenge to the responsibility of freedom is not fulfilled. Vladimir and Estragon, the two main characters, are trapped in time and space and unsupported by a meaningful community. They are in a continuous flux of disorientation and confusion, with one day blurring into the next, incapable of making effective decisions, nor able to exercise the decisions they do make. They are like the artist facing the empty sketchbook or the blank page, unable to make the first mark or type the first word. This is the absurdity that Beckett described. Life becomes alive for me when I'm working within community. As a scientist, I received satisfaction when my work met not only the standards of my colleagues, but when I was able to develop ideas that were effective or useful to my clients, usually the pig farmer. Working with the food bank, helping people get the food they need, came with the bonus of connecting with and understanding them. In my art, making work that elicits response from the viewer, either negative or positive, gives me great satisfaction. I also find great sense of accomplishment when a piece of my work speaks to me. The sense that my drawing or painting has accomplished what I was trying to do, free from the dictate of other people's opinions. Life is a process, as is art, leaving the world of Beckett's absurdity behind and transforming the pages of my sketchbook from a repository. Repository of ideas, developing those ideas into a finished piece of work, and then presenting it to others for their viewing. Seeing their reactions and seeing that my work gives the viewer pause to think about my work gives me a sense of accomplishment. So I like to put an edge into my pieces. And this is what gives me a sense of purpose.
Thank you, Al. We all begin with our own blank books. Well, sometimes the covers are slightly different. Perhaps there's some theology in there, or perhaps there is not. Each day, though, is a new page, and one might say each week a new chapter, each year another section. Imagine a new book, a fresh one, with no yesterdays, with nothing but pages ready to be filled. Ready to be filled in the way you choose. Imagine filling them freely with your tomorrows. I'm going to give you